You're listening to The Groove with Devin Pence and Reggie Hamm.
You have to take risks. There will be disappointments and failures and disasters as a result of taking these risks.
This task was appointed to you. And if you do not find a way, no one will.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here.
In the end, that's all we really are. We're just stories. Stories are what our lives are made up of. Stories, how we remember people. And stories make us feel a little less alone in the world.
Welcome to The Groove Podcast. This is Devin Pence.
And this is Reggie Hamm. Here on The Groove, we talk to people from all walks of life, all areas of life, to share their stories about pivotal moments, struggles we all face, what it takes to rise above challenging circumstances, heartbreaks, setbacks, to find what we call the groove.
You can find me at, follow me around on Instagram at Devin Pence and at my website at devinpence.com.
You can find me at Reggie Hamm on Facebook. That's 1G, 2Ms.
Be sure to head over to thegroovepodcast.com for more info about us and to check out the show notes from this episode.
And you can do us a huge favor by subscribing and hitting the 5-star rating whenever you listen to our podcast. Now look, they're 5-star podcast. Hit the 5-star. Also, if you would like to help support our currently sponsorless podcast, join our Patreon page. Any love would be much appreciated.
Much. Man, I'm super excited. I know I say this about every episode, but I'm really excited about the show today. We have Jeremy Cowart on. Many of you have probably heard of Jeremy. He's literally all over the place. He was named the most influential photographer on the internet. That's the internet, folks. By Huffington Post, Forbes, and Yahoo. Jeremy, he's an award-winning photographer, artist, and entrepreneur whose mission is to explore the intersection of creativity and empathy. Jeremy has published 4 books and is a sought-after speaker, having presented at TEDx, the United Nations, and creative conferences across the country. His latest endeavor is The Purpose Hotel, a planned global for-profit hotel chain designed to fuel the work of not-for-profit organizations. He's the founder of a global photography movement, Help Portrait, a mobile social networking app called OK Do This, and an online teaching platform called See University.
Yeah, man, his new book, I'm Possible. It's impossible, but if you put up an apostrophe there, it makes it I'm Possible. Jumping into Fear and Discovering a Life of Purpose is based on Jeremy's viral life story video that was released in 2015 and launched Jeremy's speaking career, where he has delivered this message to tens of thousands of people across America ever since. The book dives much deeper into all the stories and projects Jeremy's done, and it ultimately encourages people of all ages, all walks of life, anybody, no matter where you are, to jump into the fear in order to find your purpose in life. A lot of what we do here on The Groove.
So be sure to check out the show notes to get more information. You can find his website there. It's just jeremycowart.com. And we're just going to be talking about a lot of different stuff today to hopefully help encourage you.
Jeremy Cowart, thank you for being on The Groove today.
Of course, it's great to be here. Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, we are really thrilled. It's something that I wanted to have you on. Ever since I started the podcast and Reg joined up, we've talked about, you know, if we can just get Jeremy Cowart on the show, man, we'll have made it, you know. But no, seriously.
Now, after this, Jeremy, do we get our $1 million checks? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I'm super flattered. I feel like a nothing burger lately. So thank y'all for all the flattery.
Hey, what I thought I'd do, I just wanted to kind of kick it off because, you know, Jeremy, you know, we go way back. I mean, I think we met like way back in 2002-ish or 3 when you were doing graphic design and that kind of thing. I don't know if you remember this or not, but I just have a quick story I wanted to kick this thing off with. You, at one point, you're in Nashville now, right? But at one point, you moved to LA for a while.
Yep. Yeah, I did a year and a half out there.
Yeah, which is like 12 years in,
It's in LA years.
LA years.
No doubt.
And I can remember, I don't know what the situation was. I was doing a shoot or something, and I called you up and I asked you if I could borrow one of your lenses. And you're like, yeah, sure, man. Don't, you know, absolutely. You said, well, the only thing is we're not going to be home. So I'm going to leave it on this credenza. So just kind of open our front door and then it'll be sitting on this credenza. And you had this, I can remember this really cool, like ornate house, and there's very distinctive things about it. And in the front, you know, the best that I can remember, because we'd come over for a party one time and we had to park in the street. And remember that little gate? Like you had a little gate that kind of went to your front yard, you know?
Yeah, of course.
So this was like in a late afternoon, and you just went in. I'm like, God, this guy leaves his door open, you know, and unlocked in L.A. And I'm like, he must be very trusting. But, you know, so it was pretty simple. I opened the door, grabbed the lens, you know, used the lens, so forth and so on. We returned it. And I can't remember. It must have been maybe a year or so later. I'm a bit of a horror fan, and my wife and I went to the theater to see, remember those Paranormal Activity movies? Like there was like, they made four or five of them.
Yeah, of course.
And as we're watching it, we're getting to the very end, and it's kind of like this, the climax scene when everything is going down, and the, you know, the camera moves across the street, and I'm watching it and I'm like, that looks familiar. Like, I've seen that little gate before. And I whispered to my wife, like, that looks like Jeremy's house. I mean, there's no way it could be. And as the camera, like, went up the steps, the front door opened, and there was that same credenza that I grabbed those lenses off of, which made the movie, like, it scared me even more. Then I texted you later, and you're like, yeah, man, they took over our house. I mean, that was crazy for me.
It was crazy, especially because like the demonic room, the main scary room, was my daughter's bedroom. And so it was super surreal to watch that later.
Did any of the evil spirits get into you, Dev? Just as a curious question.
Dude, no, I got in and out of there so quick.
So you didn't?
I mean, they would have to be really fast.
Okay.
Because it was like,
I'm just double checking, man. Porch. I just want to make sure you're okay.
I mean, as far as I know, they could be lying dormant and come out at any given moment. I don't know. But hey, let's get into this, man. Jeremy, just real quick, can you kind of just want to kind of tell everybody like where they can find you? We're going to talk about this at the end of the show too, but where can people find more about Jeremy Cowart?
Yeah, just my website, jeremycowart.com. I'm at Jeremy Cowart on all the social channels. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You know, we were kind of talking a little bit earlier. You've had so much success with all your artwork, your photography, you know, your book, the Purpose Hotel, which we'll want to talk about, you know, Help Portrait, all of these things that you've done. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, we know about your successes. What about the struggles that you face, you know, every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, all of those things sound like successes, but there's a lot of failure in all those things you just mentioned. I mean, they're not all that, you know, I guess it looks amazing from the outside, but yeah, there's no doubt that all of those things were not successful. And some of them are obviously still in process. It turns out it takes a long time to build a hotel chain from scratch. So that's a long ongoing journey that I'm sure we'll get into, but yeah, I mean, I would say I'm 42 right now. I would say at the age of 42, I'm dealing with more internal fight and voices and, you know, doubt than I ever have in my life. And so I would say the doubt and the hardships have only increased rather than decreased. So I don't know if that's an age thing or midlife crisis or what, but, you know, there's no doubt I have my long list of challenges just like anybody else.
Jeremy, I love everything, literally everything about your story. One of the things that I love about how you approach your life, your success, your failures, whatever, and I think this is a real instructive thing for everybody, is that I recognized in you a real sense of following the muse wherever it takes you. And that is something I think I've struggled with. I think a lot of people struggle with when once they decide what they are, quote unquote, sometimes they have a hard time morphing that into whatever the next thing is. You know what I mean? You know, like you decide you're a drummer, and then all of a sudden an opportunity comes along that is not drumming, but it might open a skill set for you that you did not even know you had. In my case, it was book and blog writing. I had this career as a songwriter, and then all of a sudden I wrote a blog essentially trying to find people who had other people who had Angelman syndrome in their life. And that launched a whole career for me that I didn't even know it really existed. I see that happen in your journey a lot, in that you just kind of took what was available there and what you had, you know, in front of you, and you keep walking forward. And you just talked about the struggles that you're having right now. And I think, I'll take this opportunity to encourage you, because in your own journey, I find encouragement. I watched a couple of little episodes of something last night about how some movies were made. And one of the things that you realize in every story of anything that's significant or important or that's ever been done of note is that while it's being made, nobody knows they're making a classic. Nobody knows they're doing something special. It's you're in the battle. And at every turn, it's like you're on a high wire. And at every moment you feel like you can fall off. This can be a story of absolute tragedy. You know what I mean? And then you look back on it, and that's when it looks like success. You know, once it's the afterwards that you look back and go, oh, okay, well that worked. But while you're in it, you don't know if it's going to work. And I speak to that a little bit, because I believe you're one of those fighters out there who fights through that. I would encourage you just right here on the podcast to continue. I think the world needs you to. Because you're an inspiration to so many people. But I think people look at, you know, they just saw you at a corporate event. They just saw your Wikipedia page. They just saw your video. They just saw it, read your book, whatever. They think you've, quote unquote, made it. I don't know. I think maybe there's five people in the world who've made it, like Paul McCartney, Bruce Springsteen. You know, other than that, I don't know who makes it.
That's a good point.
I don't know where it is. You know what I mean? We have to get up every day and get back in the struggle. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I've made it. Because like you said, I got to keep working my tail off on a lot of things. So I'm definitely never feel that I've made it in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, I mean, that's a really beautiful reminder about the filmmaking process. Now everybody or nobody feels like they're making a classic. They just see the heart, you know, the journey and how tough it is. And that's certainly where I'm at right now. You know, I had an idea to build a hotel in 2012. It's 2020 right now. So almost 8 years ago, I had this crazy idea to build a hotel. I spent 3 years doing nothing about it because I was so afraid of it. But I knew every day that it was still the right idea, the right thing to pursue. So it wasn't in 2015 that we started taking the idea seriously. Launched it to the public in 2016, and we call it building it backwards, because it's like we hung our sign in the sky first, and then we've had to then go and figure out how to do it. Whereas most hotels develop and build on the background for 7 or 8 years, and at the very end they hang their sign on the building. So I would say doing it the way we're doing it is much harder, because you're setting expectations sky high. You know, it's one thing to launch an idea, but it's, you know, execution, especially at this scale, is just infinitely challenging, especially when you're also trying to disrupt the industry entirely.
Yeah, talk about that. What's the difference in your hotel and any garden variety Marriott that you can check into? Let's talk about your hotel. Tell us what's the difference in that.
Sure. Well, I am, you know, I traveled to over 30 countries as a photographer, and I was always amazed. You know, I stayed in the worst hotels and the nicest hotels. I've been in every form of hotel, and I'm always amazed that even the most expensive and luxury hotels are still boring, in my opinion. Sure, they may be luxurious. They might have a nice pool. They might have great food. They might have nice design and furniture and fixtures. But at the end of the day, the industry still felt like soulless to me. Like there was nothing inspiring. There was nothing that moved the human spirit. And so in 2012, I had an idea to build basically a social good hotel where every element in the building was doing something to make the world a better place. You know, whether that was the room service feeding a child in need through Food for the Hungry, or the rooms sponsoring a child and telling their story, or the internet fighting human trafficking. This hotel would be all those things. I just listed three ideas, three connection ideas. There's about 50 of those in the Purpose Hotel. That's the name of it, by the way, is the Purpose Hotel. And so the idea is that just by staying at this hotel, you will be, quote unquote, changing the world in your sleep. You know, everything you do in this building is connecting to something bigger than yourself. And so inspiration will be everywhere in this building. And cause-based connections will be everywhere. And so it's a really, really big idea that is kind of, you know, I like to say that most hotels are inward focused. You know, they're all saying we have the best price, or we have the best comfort, or we have the best food, or we're the hippest, you know, we're the new ace hotel. Whereas the Purpose Hotel is saying, yeah, we're all those things. We have great pools, great food, great whatever. But that's not the point. We're great because we're making others great. We're giving back. We're investing in the communities locally, domestically, around the country, and around the world. So we are outward focused, not inward.
I love this idea because, and I'll speak for myself only, not necessarily for the Groove podcast or for Deb or even for you, but for myself, I see people who want to change the world, and very often they channel that into politics, and as if the only people who can create effective change are people who have the controls of government or the levers of power at their disposal. I personally like the idea of people out in the private sector doing something like this. You could apply this concept to more than hotels. You could apply it to restaurants. You could apply it to movie theaters. You could apply it to, right, just pretty much any kind of enterprise out there. You could apply these same principles, I would imagine.
Oh,
right?
For sure. And that's exactly what we're doing, because we will have within the building, you know, have coffee shops and fitness and restaurants and co-working and offices. And so, yeah, absolutely. It can be applied to anything.
And that's what we're looking for as a society, is sustainability in how we change things, how we affect things for the better. And, you know, how cool would it be if you just, you know, getting in a certain car and driving to a certain hotel and checking in and ordering your meal and doing everything you normally do, just those activities alone affect, you know, a measurable amount of change in the negative quotient of society, whether you're affecting, you know, trafficking or whatever it may be. I don't even know all of the strings that you have attached to it, but even the three things that you listed, I mean, that's kind of the dream, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Jeremy, where are you guys at on the project?
We have our land secured, which will be downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right next to the main convention center. We have our management. We have renderings from our architects. We have, gosh, it's a big team already, but and we're currently fundraising this year. We hope to break ground at the end of this year or early next year. And then it's about a 2 to 3 year build from there.
That's amazing, man.
So people are buying into this. I mean, it's not just in your head anymore. You've got it's actionable stuff out there, right? You got people drawing. You got people, you know, boots on the ground, I guess you could say, actually making this thing happen.
Oh yeah, in a big way. And we've had all of that developing for about a year now. But yeah, lots of boots on the ground. It's a big ship already. It's kind of crazy.
That's awesome. Hey, let's hop over and let's talk about your book for a second, because I think that's a good jumping off point here that can kind of lead us down to some of the things that we want to talk about. Now, so your book's called I'm Possible: Jumping into Fear and Discovering a Life of Purpose. What prompted you? I mean, I think I know, but tell us what prompted you to write that book and talk a little bit about, you know, what it's about and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Years ago, my buddy John asked me to speak at his conference, and I told him, I was like, man, I'm not a speaker. I don't have much to say. And then, so I told him no, but then I kind of came back to him. I was like, you know, I think I've got a good idea to literally illustrate my story and make a video where I kind of, you know, document my journey as an artist. And so I did it for his conference, and it kind of exploded immediately. Like, there was a standing ovation. Everybody was crying. And then I found that I kept getting asked to do it over and over. And every time I would do it, I'd get a standing ovation and everybody was crying. So I was like, man, this is really having a much deeper impact than I was expecting. And I think it helps that it's all visual and it has music. And so it's really like you're watching a movie that I'm narrating. And so every time I do it, I would get asked, where can I watch this online to send it to other people? So I finally released it online a few years ago, and it kind of blew up, you know, millions of views, tens of thousands of people posted it to their Facebook pages, which for a 30-minute video, that was really surprising. And then that kind of accidentally launched a speaking career, and then it turned into a book. And, you know, and so it's been a wild journey. I never intended, you know, to be publishing a book or, you know, traveling as a speaker. So you got to be careful when you say yes to things. Might just surprise you.
That's true. I think some of the things I've experienced throughout my life, you know, certainly nothing like that. I've made people cry, but probably not for those
for different reasons, Dev.
You make different reasons. But you do kind of, you kind of get into your thing or whatever, and then you're asked to do something else. And I've been through that myself. You know, I was asked to do something and I'm like, man, I don't do that. I'm not this or I'm not that. And then something in you, like you said, like you do it. And then like, it literally just opens up doors and it kind of pushes you through. You know, Reg, you talked about it a little bit earlier, how you kind of accidentally stumbled into a new career and just, I mean, it's just an interesting road. And I think the most important thing in life and what I try to encourage people to do is to, you know, these ideas, like, you know, this hotel idea of yours, like you said, you know, you thought about it and then you just kind of sat on it. And then at some point something prompted you, you pushed the gas pedal. And I always try to talk, I always tell this to my kids, you know, when they were growing up, I'm like, you know, life is kind of like, you know, driving a car. Like, you can sit in it, it can be running, but, you know, if you don't put it in gear and move forward, you're not going to experience anything. So I think it's important to, you know, have ideas, do things, be encouraged, but step into those things, you know, step into that fear and step into that, because sometimes in the fear and sometimes in the darkness, like, that's where, you know, we find the best thing that could ever happen to us.
Jeremy, do you find it saying yes is the key?
I do. I mean, obviously there has to be some research on that yes. Like, for me, I always bounce it off those closest to me who will be really honest. You know, when I have an idea, I'll run it by my wife, and she's just crazy dead honest about ideas. Most ideas she's just not a big fan of. you know, it's rare that she supports, but then sometimes I realize, like, too, even if she doesn't like something, you know, she's not in my industry. She doesn't know photography, you know, the creative industry. So then I seek feedback from people within my industry who will also be honest with me. And then I'll wait, because ideas always seem amazing at first, and then over time you realize maybe they're not that great. And so I typically buy the domain names. I'm like a domain name hog. I have tons of them.
I am too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and then I just wait it out and see what I think, you know. And I think the good ideas, actually there are still a lot of good ideas that I think are still worthy of pursuing, but at some point you just reach your bandwidth. You know, there's only so much you can do. So I have a lot of great ideas. That there's a couple ideas that are now multi-million dollar selling products that I see in stores everywhere, and I had those ideas long before they came out. So sometimes you have to grieve the babies that were never born, you know. Like, it's a crazy journey being an idea person and having to choose which ones to pursue.
When it comes to the wife conversation, I have a very similar situation as you. You know, the old saying, Behind every great man is a woman rolling her eyes. So,
yep. That's good. I've never heard that. That's perfect.
You know, Jeremy, you're talking about earlier, we were talking before we started recording, having all these ideas and doing these things. You made a comment similar to sometimes you feel like you've got too many jobs, and that seems cool to a lot of people. But where is the bandwidth? Where is the cutoff when you're an idea machine and they're not just, you know, sitting in a corner? They're all moving and churning. Where's the cutoff for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I'm always trying to figure that out. You know, I've got four kids, and so my life really is, I'm about as suburbia dad as you can get. You know, I'm
say no more. The idea stops at 8 o'clock in the morning. I know exactly how that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, the idea start at 9 a.m. for me. 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. is all dad duty, you know, and then really 6 p.m. or 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. is also dad duty. So I've got a very limited window that I can, you know, perform and do things. And so, yeah, like I was telling you earlier, like, it can seem sexy to be doing all these things. And the older I get, the more I find that that's just so overrated. You know, I think I crave more simplicity as I get older. And so I'm definitely trying to wind a few things down so that I can only do a couple things and be more focused.
Where's your primary love, man? If, you know, if they came to you and said, hey, in 2020, Jeremy, you can only do like two things. Where is that going to land for you?
Yeah, I love anything that involves creativity and giving back. In fact, I came up with a mission statement a couple of years ago that said, my mission is to explore the intersection of creativity and empathy. So as long as it's artistic and has a social good element, then I'm all in.
You're such a great photographer. Is that the kind of the tip of the creative spear for you, or is it just a means to a bigger end?
No, I mean, I love painting. I love drawing. I've been doing a lot of fine art over the last year. You know, I've been exploring, even really pursuing that as another side hustle career. Looking into galleries and all that good stuff, painting like crazy. And that's where my love started, is abstract art. I mean, my favorite artist on the planet, well, he doesn't live anymore. He's not alive anymore, but Jean-Michel Basquiat was a painter in the 80s.
Yeah.
And so he's...
They made a movie about him.
Yeah, he was an abstract artist. And, you know, so I'm obsessed with abstract art. You know, so I think in my core, I really am a painter, but the camera has just become one of the tools over time that I also love using.
And one of the things I love that you've been doing lately, that I've, you know, because I've, you know, I follow you around the interwebs, is how you've been opening up your studio. And, you know, because you were known as, you know, a celebrity, you know, quote unquote celebrity photographer. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a label that's put, because, you know, you're talented in that space, and you got a lot of great opportunities. And then you open up your studio and you shoot just whoever wants to come in and pay to have their portrait done, like, you know, that kind of thing. And the where you've taken that, I think, is really cool. But there's an element I wanted you to kind of respond to and to kind of talk about a little bit, because I paid a lot of attention to that, because I'm always trying to figure out the same kind of thing, like, how can I push myself creatively in my directing or whatever it is I do. And I noticed that, you know, you always, as you said earlier, you always, with what you do, you give back. So you, it's like, not like you have any kind of Jeremy Cowart secret sauce that you like aren't afraid to, like, you know, give out. You've put out so many things. You've got the online school thing. And I was kind of reading a lot of the comments and things, and you were basically encouraging other photographers. You know, the photography community, it's kind of a, you know, it's a humongous, I mean, it's just ginormous. I don't think people realize just how many people, just because anybody, you know, can pick up a camera, you know, doesn't necessarily make them a photographer, but there are people who are trying to make a living. And I remember you were kind of giving some advice, like, here's how, you know, here's what I did, and here's what you can do as well. Like, this is kind of a formula for that. And I can remember even reading in some of the comments, people were kind of coming back at you a little bit like, well, that's a little unfair, you know, Jeremy, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, because you're famous, you know, people know who you are and all that kind of stuff. And it, you know, it kind of bothered me a little bit because people don't want to put the work in, and people want to immediately, you know, go from, you know, in my field, they want to go from straight out of, you know, Full Sail or college, or, you know, from being a PA to a director, and without putting the years of what you have to put into to get to that. Can you talk about that a little bit? Can you respond to that?
Yeah, it is weird, I think, not to be that guy that's dissing the younger generation, but I mean, there is this, you know, need that's been around for several years now where people just want to be an influencer right away, you know, they want to have the big following and the name and all that. And I've actually had a lot of interesting conversations. I always, you know, try to give back by meeting with up and comer creatives, and you know, I always say you have to influence first to be an influencer. You have to put in your, you know, your quote unquote 10,000 hours of doing something interesting. That's the only reason I've had a small pocket of people following me, is that I did a decade of photography, you know, and I worked really hard at learning and shooting and failing and trying, and, you know, and now I feel like I'm relearning all over again, but I'm just always curious and always diving deeper and trying new things and experimenting and reinventing. And so I think you really can't even think about the fame or the influence, whatever. You just got to keep your head down and start, you know, cranking out stuff, and the rest will come if you're good. You know, always try say, find out what you have to say and how to say it in a unique way. If you can figure out those two things, like, you're golden, you know, finding your voice and how to make it unique.
I'm so with you on this, Jeremy. I when I'm in a meeting with someone and I hear them say the words, I want to affect the culture, I kind of politely excuse myself, because I know that probably what the last thing is that they're about to do is affect the culture, because that's not how I don't think you go into it planning to affect the culture. You go into it planning to create great work, and work that's meaningful, and work that moves you and works on a heart level for you. And then that's, you know, it works one by one. I don't think if your desire is to be, you know, the rock star standing in front of 100,000 people, you may not get there, because that in itself is not the goal, right? That is sort of a outgrowth of the goal. You two play stadiums not because they wanted to play stadiums. They play stadiums because they wrote these great songs that that lots of people want to hear, you know? Exactly. And so the stadium experience is just a necessary part of, you know, it's sort of the function, you know, the end result function of something that happens deeper and more internally than that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You said this, and I think it's wonderful that you've got to find out what you want to say. I'm a firm believer that you have to live to, and I tell all young writers, they ask me what's the key to, you know, writing. And I always say, go complicate your life. You know, if you've lived a really protected life, if you've lived a life without tragedy, if you've lived a life without pain, if you have avoided all of that stuff, you probably don't have anything to say to anybody.
Yeah.
You, sir, have had all of those things, and talk about that a little bit. Talk about how that informs your art, how that informs your journey. You've had you know, if anybody that wants to go watch your video will get the, you know, the rough start that you had and all of that stuff and all of those things that you overcame. It's totally inspirational. But just to maybe touch on a subject that might be a bit painful, but to talk about your brother a little bit and how that situation informs your moving forward and how it's informed your art.
Sure. Yeah, I've certainly had my share of loss and hardships. My brother was 43 when he suddenly passed away of a heart attack. And that was, gosh, 5 or 6 years ago now. And we had no idea, you know, he had anything wrong with him. We thought he was as healthy as could be. And so, yeah, to suddenly lose a brother certainly changes a lot of perspective and all that. You know, I've adopted, I have 4 children, but 2 of them are adopted from Haiti. And, you know, I face a significant challenge with one of them every day because he endured a lot of hard stuff while he was in Haiti. And, you know, that can cause a lot of brain trauma for children. And so what was done to him has made him very, you know, challenging.
How old is he?
Oh, he's now about to turn 9 years old. And so he has a lot of great days, too. But, man, the hard days are the hardest thing I've ever faced in my life. And, you know, that continues to you know, happen. I never know which day is going to be good or hard, you know, good or hard day. And so, and there, you know, I'm now facing my own health challenges. I've got a neurological disease and I'm fighting every day and trying to figure out how to beat it. Not that I can beat it. I'll have it the rest of my life, but how to take care of myself. You know, and so I'm, like I said, I'm 42. And so, yeah, there's certainly a lot of, challenges dealing with my parents who are, you know, aging and have a slew of health issues. You know, life is full of challenges right now, for sure.
Wow. And how does this, do you channel this into your art? Can you channel it into your art? Does it inform you in a, like an oblique way where maybe it comes out in ways that you don't even think about consciously?
Yeah, I think so. I think it keeps me, very humble for sure, but very, understanding and empathetic to others. You know, I don't see myself as any different from, you know, the lady who cleans this building and washes the toilets. You know, I think of myself as just another person finding his way through life. I don't think of myself as an influencer, a celebrity, none of that stuff. I live a very normal, quiet life, especially these days. But all of those things certainly influence the way I approach people when I photograph them, the art I make, the approach I take when speaking and then talking to people after I speak. It approaches, I mean, it informs the approach we're taking on the Purpose Hotel, you know, how to relate to people. It informs the book that I just did. I mean, yeah, it certainly it affects all of it.
How does it affect how do you photograph people? That's interesting to me. In what way would that affect it? Does it change what you're looking for out of a shot?
I think so, yeah, because people walk into a photo studio and they're really, really intimidated. They're nervous about how they look. They've never done this before. They feel awkward. They're intimidated by being photographed by a well-known photographer, all that stuff. And then to break all those barriers down and just to pour into them and love on them and ask them about their life and get to know them, it suddenly becomes this super laid back, you know, fun experience, and you get much better results because of that. You know, when they suddenly feel like a friend is photographing them, they almost forget the camera is there. And so, yeah, there's much better results that way.
And it sounds to me, you know, I'm just outside looking in, but it would sound like what you're looking for in a photograph, in a shot, in the capturing of a moment is something real and something expressive and something that actually sort of captures them as opposed to just a pretty picture, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll be honest, I don't have a specific plan. I never do. I kind of wait and watch. I try a bunch of things really quickly, and I look at the results. I recently heard Annie Leibovitz speak, and I loved hearing her talk because she has the same approach. She lets the scene unveil itself. She's not this master director that knows exactly what she's going to get. I'm the same way. Some photographers are that way. They see the shot before it happens, and I'm an artist with the way I use light. I don't say that to be whatever, but like I have this insane process that mixes LED lights with projection with strobes that change every time I shoot, and the projector is changing the backdrop every 2 seconds, and all the LED lights are rotating. And so I kind of throw people into this just total chaos of experimentations with light. Then I direct them. Then I tell them and just start having a conversation. And while we're doing that, all the scene around them is changing. And so for me, it's just a way to, let's just see what happens. Let's throw you in the blender and see what flavor comes out. It's really fun.
What kind of smoothie are you?
Yeah.
I think the LSD helps too, right, Jeremy? When you just kind of like give them a little at the beginning and they kind of...
I actually yeah. missed that. You think a I'm little kidding. Way helps.
LSD? When you give them the LSD?
Yeah.
Well, I think we all know that LSD is a prime ingredient to all art. I mean, I think that's kind of on the table.
One thing I can attest to. I mean, I think it's a lot about authenticity, and people can sense that. People know when you're being fake, and they know when you're being real. And you're able to, anytime you're able to, and it can be in a negotiation or, you know, in a photo session or whatever it is. And when someone can feel that you're connecting with them and you find a way to connect with them at a heart level, it's sort of like the walls, you can almost just kind of see the walls come down and things open up.
Yep, for sure. Every time.
You know, Jeremy, as I get older, we're in this world, in this culture, where everybody is kind of geared to quote unquote bring it, right? You know, we've got the Voice and American Idol and America's Got Talent and all these shows where everybody is sort of encouraged to, you know, man, just bring your best, and you've got to, you know, raise to another level, and this and this and this and this, and it's all very it can lend itself to artifice, right? But I find I'm more interested. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who wants to do a record, and he's brilliant. He's great. He absolutely should do a record. And he's like, man, I just want it to be, I don't know if it's going to be good enough. And then I said, man, buddy, we don't really need you to be good. We need you to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm really looking for more now in whatever artistic expression. I mean, obviously there's a bar of technical expertise. You don't want to see, you know, a movie that's not done technically right, you know, where you can't hear the dialogue and you can't see the, you know, you can't see this and you can't see that. Obviously we want to see something shot well, but at the end of it, I really want to see authenticity. I want to see heart, I guess is the only way to put it. It's one of the things that I really appreciate about everything that you've done artistically. I feel like I get that. Do you think the quote unquote celebrities who you've shot, do you think that's one of the reasons they come to you?
I would hope so. I mean, a lot of times, you know, celebrities or even their handlers have no idea who I am as a person. I typically get hired because of my portfolio and my artistic approach. But yeah, I hope then I'm able to really comfort them or, you know, make them feel comfortable on set because of my laid back demeanor or whatever. And so, I hope it all plays into it.
One thing as we kind of wrap up here, what we try to do and talk about on The Groove, or our goal is to share other people's stories of, you know, sometimes, you know, you're in the groove, sometimes you're out, sometimes you're in it, sometimes you get kicked out. As we kind of wrap up here, do you have any kind of, like, you know, words of encouragement for people that are, you know, whether they be creative or artistic or whatever, do you have any kind of, like, words of encouragement that you could kind of impart?
Yeah, I would just say to, you know, kind of what we were talking about earlier, it's really trying to figure out, like, what do you love? You know, what do you love to do? You know, because I think a lot of people, I think part of the midlife crisis thing is people realizing they thought they wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, a physical therapist, a teacher, and then they realize years into it that, wait, I don't actually love doing this, you know? So it's important to figure that out first. Then how can you, you know, say something within that industry that's in a unique way, you know? So as a photographer, it's one thing to take great pictures of the thing you love, but chances are there's hundreds, if not thousands of people that are also taking great pictures of that thing. So how do you then tweak it and make it your own? Then you've really got something. You're doing something you love. You're telling the story in a unique way. And I think that can be applied to so many different careers, you know. And so, yeah, it's ultimately the million-dollar question. You know, it's finding your vision. It's always an ongoing journey. I mean, for me, you know, 15 years into this, it's still the ongoing journey. It's figuring out who I am and what I have to say.
That's awesome, man. Your book is called I'm Possible, Jumping into Fear and Discovering a Life of Purpose. And they can find that again, Jeremy, just at jeremycoward.com.
Yep.
Well, thank you, man, so much for being on the show. It's been a real honor to get to catch up and to always, you know, get a little bit of your insight. I can tell you for a fact, you've inspired me in my career and things that have been, I have found success in that I have gained a lot of inspiration just following you around. So I encourage everybody, you know, hop on and follow, you know, hop on the Jeremy Howard train and follow him around. You'll see some authenticity. You'll see some great art. And you'll also see some funny tweets. I have to say this before we go, because I follow you on Twitter. And the other day, you sent out a tweet about, does anyone know how to get rid of bad smells?
Yep.
Did you ever get, because what did you say, like your studio's sandwiched between like a restaurant and smoking, somebody smoking,
yeah,
or something?
I'm like in an old factory, and then I'm next to a seafood restaurant. The public restrooms are right outside my door, and there's people that smoke outside my doors all the time. So I'm like in a turd sandwich over here. So yeah, I'm always trying to figure out how to make it smell better.
So that just proves you can still make beautiful, amazing art with the stench of life surrounding you, right?
That's right. Trying my best.
You're doing great, man. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm sure you've inspired people out there. You've certainly inspired us. And that's how you stay in the groove, man.
Exactly. Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Man, that was just amazing. It was inspiring. Head over to thegroovepodcast.com for the show notes and to learn more about Jeremy. You're going to want to do that.
And just as a reminder, don't forget to hit that 5-star rating and give us a thumbs up wherever you listen to your podcast. It really does help push the show and get us noticed. Also, if you'd like to help support the show, head over to thegroovepodcast.com and click on the support tab, and you'll be directed to our Patreon page.
Thank you, guys. We need the love. Oh, we just love us. Love us. Love us. No, just kidding. Thank you guys for joining us. And remember that anywhere you are, no matter who you are, no matter how old you are, no matter what failures you've had, no matter what your vision is, you can find the groove. That's what we're looking for here, to find the groove. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to The Groove with Devin Pence and Reggie Hamm.